Welcome to the conference room with today's guest, Dan Ellis.
So it creates a lot of alignment to make sure that we have the right person in place from the get-go. And if we have to keep searching and digging and it makes our job harder, then so be it. That's why we get paid a solid success fee. So I think that the contingent shops.
Welcome to the conference room, a weekly podcast where business leaders and growth experts kindly share their experiences, actionable tips, and secrets to successfully grow a business. If you like the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a five-star review. It'll really help us out. And I really hope you enjoy this week's episode. I'm Simon Lader. Welcome to the conference room. Good afternoon and welcome to the conference room. I'm joined by Dan Ellis. Dan is the managing director of Townsend Search, a retained executive search firm that focuses on accounting and financial services recruitment. He joined Townsend Search back in 2013 and brings deep business understanding informed by career experience in public accounting and consulting. Prior to Townsend Search, Dan was a senior professional with two regional public accounting firms, then joined the transaction services team at Plante Moran and specialized in performing financial due diligence services for acquisitions by private equity firms. He's got a business administration degree from Western Michigan University and is a registered CPA, so you can probably understand how excited I am to talk to him. Dan, good afternoon and welcome to the conference room.
Simon, good afternoon. Thank you for having me. Looking forward to our discussion today.
Great stuff. So all heroes have an origin story, and you are the hero of our story. So tell me, how did you get from graduating university through a career in finance and accounting and due diligence, and now, like me, in the trenches in the executive search space?
Yeah, great question. I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. My father and grandfather bought a manufacturing business back in the late 70s and really grew up inside that business. So I had an early passion for business itself. So got my accounting degree, spent the first 8 years of my career ascending upward through public accounting and consulting, focused on working with privately owned middle market companies across a variety of different industries, and really wanted to pivot my career and do something more entrepreneurial. I always enjoyed networking and connecting people and working with clients to solve problems and find solutions. And I had the opportunity to meet my colleague at Townsend Search Group, who I've been working with now for over the last 10 years, and really started learning the operations of executive search and the process, and slowly evolved my skill set into managing full cycle desk recruiting to business development. I've spent a lot of time working on our firm and its growth, as well as refining and optimizing our processes and how we go about searches. And we're based in Detroit, Michigan, and Northern Michigan, but we do national searches. We have the capabilities to do that in a far-reaching network. So it's been quite a journey getting into executive search, but I find it a lot of fun and still share many of the same clients that I had in public accounting that we work with now. So I've been able to further enhance those relationships as well. So it's a little bit about my backstory.
Great stuff. So what was it that inspired you to leave the world of accounting and then cross the chasm to recruit for that world?
The path in public accounting for me would have been continuing to ascend into a partner level spot. And when I had gotten married, I talked to my wife about trying to find something different, more eat what you kill, more entrepreneurial, whether that was starting a business or buying a business. But I had always knew about our firm's reputation in the market, specifically Peter Bridges, my colleague, and saw opportunity to get into that industry and help support their growth. He was looking for someone to help with succession planning and the future of the firm. And so it worked out beautifully in terms of timing. And it was brand new to me. I had to learn executive recruiting inside and out, but I committed. My wife was very supportive of it, and I jumped in with both feet, really adding value where I could and just shadowing folks in my firm and learning things from the ground up. So I guess it was really my entrepreneurial spirit that led me into this profession, and public accounting consulting was a great foundation. I learned so much about business that if I had not experienced, I wouldn't be in the position I am today. So I guess we all don't know what our endpoint is on the journey, but things evolve and you can take the opportunities as they come in front of you. And we've been very successful so far in our journey here at Townsend.
Great stuff. So as we both know, the recruitment industry is incredibly varied. Okay. And I come from a search background as well. My recruiting business is in cybersecurity. So, and in the cybersecurity world, and I would imagine also in the accounting world, recruiting forms a number of different models, whether it's contingency, whether it's kind of contingency with like an element of exclusivity through to retained. Okay. So from your perspective, why do your clients work with a retained model as opposed to a contingent model?
Yeah, that's a great question.
And not just because we're the best and we're awesome. I mean, from a model point of view, what's the advantage? How do you frame the advantage to them?
Yeah, I think when it comes to retain, you're going to be prioritized. There's going to be a level of commitment that you won't get with contingent. So I always say, if you work with a retained firm, you have one throat to choke. You have someone that will take that off their plate and run a process to deliver a successful placement. So if you're going contingent, those shops are usually good at giving you resumes. Internally, they're not wired to collaborate. They're competitive against each other. And because of that, it lowers the priority of your search because they're all competing against each other. The probability of them finding success is low. With us, we take more of an approach like an investment bank where you retain us. We consult with your business to learn it inside out so that we understand the story and the vision that you're taking to market. And then we proactively approach people after we conduct a thorough market research to make sure that we're complete with the population we're contacting. So just the level of detail and thought that goes into our process is highly customized. And as a result, we keep digging until we see results. It's not like we throw a job posting up and hope and pray that the right person is wandering along and trips on our job posting. We're out there calling people that are happy in their position, and we come with them with a better opportunity, and we're able to recruit because of that. So I truly think that retained search is the best approach. If you're committed to filling the role or the position, you can control the time of the process. There's a lot of variables that come into play and you get a more responsive result. So there are situations where a contingent firm is the right solution. And we have clients that we will work with exclusively on a contingent basis, meaning exclusively, they're not using any other search firms. We're not competing against anybody else. So it's not who can sprint with the quickest resume. It's the marathon who can get the right result. And we realize that doesn't fit everybody's need, but we're the type that we don't work on a high quantity of searches. They're all high quality. And as a result, we always deliver. So I tend to think, even in our case, it's a little bit of a hybrid. There are some firms like the big firms, Korn Ferry, et cetera, they charge absurd retainers up front. Our retainers, there is about a third of the fee up front, and then the remainder is contingent upon us delivering. So there's that initial upfront investment from the client to align interests, make sure they're committed and invested, and we can get a response out of them when needed. But it's still on us to deliver, and we have to work towards that remainder. So we found a lot of success in that structure. But great question, Simon.
So it's really interesting because, first of all, I agree wholeheartedly with everything you said. And in fact, I would even go further because in our industry, and I don't know much about the accounting industry. I've never recruited inside it. I've done the occasional kind of FD job for cyber, but I've never really done any accounting recruiting. But as far as I'm concerned, I think that contingency recruiting is destroying the cybersecurity market. I really believe that. And I'll tell you why. If you look at the cybersecurity market, if you go just go on LinkedIn and look at sales engineering, technical roles, consulting roles, you'll see there are lots and lots of people that have got quite short hops, okay? 18 months here, 2 years there, 6 months here. And even if you discount COVID and the economic challenges that presented, you still see a lot of people that have kind of moved around. And I do not believe anybody, when they were 9 years old, thought, Dad, when I grow up, I want to be a job hopper, okay? Nobody wanted to do that, okay? And I genuinely believe the reason why people make a series of hops is because they were poorly advised through the recruiting process, okay? And I think that if you have a candidate put into a position, okay, then the person that's got the least amount to lose if it all goes belly up is a contingency recruiter, because typically they're giving very small, if any, form of guarantee on their work. That's part of the cost of working with a contingency recruiter, right? It's like, oh yeah, we'll guarantee the first month or two, right? So they've got the least amount of skin in the game when it comes to that person being successful, okay? The problem is that the company will take this person on. If it doesn't work out, then they'll fire them after 6 months. Or if the person thinks, this isn't really for me, and they move on, all right? The reason I think for a lot of that is that it just creates almost like a wash of people that are on job boards, they'll respond because they're not particularly happy because they've been in the wrong job. They'll respond to immediate reach outs from, you know, or the kind of open to work thing from recruiters. Okay. So the class of people that you and I would work with who are happy where they are and would only move on because you're offering them a better opportunity. And typically they've been where they are for 3-4 years or more. Okay. Those people are working with the likes of you and I. Okay. The problem is that contingency recruiters are getting the low-hanging fruit, and it just perpetuates the problem more and more and more. And in my opinion, the reason why, certainly my industry, I'd be interested to hear if you feel this also mirrors in yours. I think the reason why there are so many people that have got so many short stints on their resume is simply because of a broken recruitment process that is wholly at the feet of contingency recruitment and the people who use it.
Yeah, a couple things there. I would absolutely agree. When I was in public accounting and consulting, I was amazed at the recruiters and the lack of professionalism when they would reach out and their lack of understanding of business. It was very transactional, very focused on the recruiter and their income. And our model is completely different. It's all about the client. It's all about collaborating as a firm. We guarantee our placements. So we have to stand by them. I don't want the wrong person to be placed because then I have to go back to the market to find a replacement. I'm guaranteeing that. So it creates a lot of alignment to make sure that we have the right person in place from the get-go. And if we have to keep searching and digging and it makes our job harder, then so be it. That's why we get paid a solid success fee. So I think that the contingent shops, they ill-advise the candidates because they don't play the long game. They're not focused on the relationship. We are focused on the relationship. We do play the long game. We have candidates reaching out to us, just letting us know they're going to be passively looking in the market, but they won't go on job sites. They won't talk to the contingent shop. So they're organic proprietary leads that we can introduce to our clients. And that's one of the values that a retained shop can bring as well. It's just those long-term relationships with non-job hoppers or people that do truly value our guidance and expertise, because I didn't have anybody giving me advice back in my public accounting days. There's nobody you can talk to in your organization. You can't go talk to your boss about making a potential move. So I view my position as being able to help the accounting and finance professionals understand the market, understand their options, educate them on compensation, trends that we're seeing. I didn't know private equity existed when I started in public accounting. Now we spend probably 80% of our time working with private equity firms and the companies they're acquiring to build out their accounting and finance team or find their first CFO. So I find that just helping to provide that knowledge to people, even if it's just free advice, what goes around comes around. And that's how we get long-term relationships in our business. The contingent shops are very short-sighted and very transactional.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I remember one time in my career, I started out doing contingent recruitment. I think most of us do. And I remember there was one time where I advised a client not to take someone, one of my candidates who was about to offer a job to. And you know, when it doesn't smell right, you know, we've all had it, you know, it doesn't smell right, right? And I advised my client not to offer my own candidate, you know, because it was like, I don't think this is going to stick, you know? I think he's going to take it, but it's not really what he said he wanted at the outset. I think he's desperate. I think he's more desperate than he's letting on. So, and the last thing I want, Mr. Client, is for him to join you. And then in 6 weeks' time, he gets the job he really wanted and then he's off, right? So, and I remember a colleague of mine turned around, and I was relatively junior at the time. He turned around and absolutely gave me a tongue lashing. Like, it's not for you to say, it's up to them, blah, blah, blah. And really kind of went 9 yards. And I went to my boss, who was a fantastic guy, who was a real mentor to me. And he said to me, if you don't think it's right, his view was, even though we're contingency, we still work like a retained firm. So the companies will give us their natural loyalty. It's a model I don't think would work today, but back then it did. And he absolutely stood by that approach of, if you don't think this is right, but he did remark that it was very much the exception rather than the rule in that market. You know, it's something actually I say to my clients that hitherto have been using contingency recruiters. When was the last time a contingency recruiter ever told you not to hire one of their guys?
Well, we actually find ourselves in that position all the time, and it makes our job more difficult, but it's the right thing to do for the client.
100%.
And as a recruiter, candidates tend to open up to us. You know, we're kind of like the bartender where people just come in and just unload everything and open up right away and tell us their motivations and what they're happy about, what they're not happy about. They're not going to tell that to a client interviewing them directly on their own. So we're able to find behaviors, understand transitions, and really try to find that alignment to make sure that it fits, it will fit long term, before we even present a candidate, or maybe even before we even present an opportunity to them, just let them describe what they aspire to do in their career. And I think that that really helps being that intermediary between the client and the candidate, because we're here to create a win. And that's our job, is to bring two parties together to find success. And if we don't think that one of the parties is right, we'll nuke it, or we'll continue to drill into it. So I think assessments can help with things like that, but sometimes you don't know until someone starts, and that's where a guarantee can be really helpful.
Yeah, for sure. And it's interesting, actually, when you talk about that kind of bartender or that kind of trusted advisor, and oftentimes we'll be sitting and we'll be the kind of trusted advisor of the candidate going through the process and the trusted advisor of the client that's looking for that skill set. And it can sometimes be opportunistic to tell each side what we know the other side wants to hear. Okay. So we sometimes have the opening, if you like, to be that kind of, to manipulate and exploit that situation. And I think that, again, if your goal is, I just want the fee, I want to make the short-term win, it can be very seductive to tell the client, if you want to land the candidate, he's like, even though it might not be true, tell him this, 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 and this. And say to the candidate, the client really wants this, 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 this. Make sure you tell them you can do that, even if you can't, okay? The beauty, I think, of a retained and a more long-term relationship is that you never really, it doesn't really benefit you to do that, because you'll know that even if you don't fill this role with this particular candidate, you'll just have to spend some time, you'll find another one. Where with contingency, if you don't place this role with that candidate, the other shop, it will, with theirs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a further weakness, I believe, in the contingent model.
I would agree. And one thing to add to that, another value that a recruiter brings is, especially during negotiation. So early in the process, we'll understand historical compensation for a candidate, what they're expecting in their next role. And we can manage expectations throughout the process. But when it gets to negotiating, that becomes very emotional. And we're able to delicately handle those conversations so that we can get certain asks for the candidate. Meanwhile, we are a client advocate. They're the one paying the fee. So we do side with them, but they're paying us to bring the deal together. So sometimes it's challenging them in compensation or being firm or trying to find creative ways to bring a deal together, like identifying non-economic values or leveraging geographic locations. So I think just being that conduit between the candidate and client can help increase the probability of bringing the deal together rather than trying to do it on your own, because the candidate is not going to be as open directly with the hiring manager or their future boss, but they will to us. And I think a good example, we do a lot of work in mergers and acquisitions and building out corporate development teams within companies that are growing through acquisitions. And we're often looking for investment bankers, and 2 to 3 year investment banker out of a good undergrad is commanding a high cash compensation right now. But for these corporate development roles, we're able to actually talk them down and taking a reduction in their cash comp, because we can really articulate the career path for them if they were to go in that direction, which ultimately leads to equity in a business most often. So money isn't everything, and having us involved, we can really help bridge the gap and even finding people that will take less money because they're really interested in a business or the function is intriguing to them, et cetera. So just another positive that,
yeah,
that we can provide.
Yeah, no, for sure. So it's interesting. Somebody I was talking to a couple of months ago, recruitment and the search market, and an observation that they made was that at the end of the day, we all recruit us. We all have access basically to the same candidate pool. Okay. However experienced we are, however well networked we are, broadly speaking, we all have access to pretty much the same pool. Okay. So it's not necessarily the candidates that make the difference. It's the process that makes the difference. Okay. So first of all, is that a statement that you would necessarily agree with? And beyond that, what would you highlight as the hallmarks of a good recruiting process?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. The process is what makes the difference, because it's thought out, it's collaborative, it's timely. There is a low supply and a high demand for these candidates right now. So how you engage with them, how often you engage with them is very important. If too much time goes by, they lose interest. They move on. They have other opportunities. So for us, I always say that we sharpen the axe up front. So before we even pick up the phone call and we call candidates, we consult with the client, we do thorough market research, where we're looking for certain attributes or experiences or geographies of candidates and creating a population. And then we prioritize who we're reaching out to make sure that we're complete with our process. And through that, you funnel the results down and the top people we present. But I really think that that process that typically takes between 60 and 90 days from start to when someone's in the seat is the value. It's taking that pressure off the client and owning the delivery of that placement and managing them and coaching them through that process. It's kind of like going to get a root canal. It may hurt and be painful, but we'll do the best that we can to make it a pleasant experience. Yes, the fee hurts on the end, but it's immaterial in terms of the value that that person will deliver to a company. If we place a CFO at a family-founded business that's never had a CFO, and that family's looking to sell at some point, that CFO could add a one-time to two-time turn on their EBITDA valuation. I mean, that's tremendous for spending $500,000 in cash comp every year. You know, it could add up to millions to tens of millions of dollars. So it's not much of a science. There is definitely an art to it. And you have to leverage your warm network and existing leads to mine them for candidates, or more importantly, referrals, because they're great resources. But also make sure that you're being thorough in assessing that current market of all the cold leads you have to make sure you're engaging with them as well to deliver the best results at that time and period for your client. because it is about finding the right person, right spot, right situation. There's so much that has to align. It is very much like dating. Timing is a lot of everything, and you can't rely on just an inventory of resumes like the contingent shops do. You need to continue to be out there watering, fertilizing, giving sunlight to your network, because that is a lot of the value. You know, we're kind of like surgeons. We not only get paid for the actual procedure, but you're paying for the 20 years of experience leading up to that, the education, all of that. And I think people often forget that, where, yeah, we had a quick idea that was the winner for a search, but we met them 10 years ago. And we've been in contact that entire time. So maybe it was quick, maybe one took longer, but they all kind of balance out. And I do think that process makes the difference. And not everybody manages it as well. Yes, we have access to the same candidates, but I'll tell you, even yesterday, I talked with doing a director of finance search in Milwaukee for a private equity platform. And the candidate said, Dan, I get 40 of these in mails a day and I delete them all, but yours really stood out because it was just exciting and the story was compelling and I felt the need to get on the phone. That's how we differentiate versus the contingent shops that just spam. Every one of our messages is customized, or even better, if we have a phone number, we just pick up the phone and talk, call them. You know, people are afraid of the phone and I don't understand why, but I think it's our best weapon right now.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's interesting when you said a few minutes ago that recruitment is more of an art than a science. I did bridle, to be honest, because in my own mind, I do think that it is a science insofar as that people say, oh, you know, it's just a numbers game. And I believe it is a numbers game in terms of, you know, we know because we have the metrics to support it, that if we want to have a short list of set, if we want to have, you know, the guy and a spare, which is our ultimate goal, okay? So we want to have a short list of, say, 3 or 4 candidates going into, you know, going into the client. Then we know how many of each stage before that we need to talk to, all the way down to how many people we're going to be reaching out to by phone, by email, by instant message, and so on and so forth, okay? And it literally just becomes that funnel, knowing that we've reverse engineered based on our average conversion rates all the way back to each stage of the, what we call in-house, the pre-pipeline, right? So when you said, oh, it's an online science, I was like, ooh, you know, it kind of smarted a little bit. However, as you were continuing to talk, I was like, well, it is a science, but each part has an art to it. So you can send out a bunch of messages, and we do, all right? But the art is crafting each message to the right person, you know, so because you've taken the time to look and, oh, this, but, oh, you know, he went to this school and, you know, or we have a connection with that guy or whatever, you know, and making each one personal. And I completely agree that what sets the great reach out to one that's going to get deleted is that ability to tell stories. And also knowing that, okay, this guy went into a lot of detail on his LinkedIn profile, clearly he's a detailed guy. So I'll put more detail in that approach, where this person is very kind of bullet pointed. That one will reduce down into bullet points, yeah, that kind of thing. So I still firmly believe, and I'm going to put my stake in the ground, that it is a science. But I definitely agree with you that, that each stage in that scientific process has a huge amount of art to it.
Yes, we're very objective, data-driven, process-oriented, and I agree. I maybe step back two steps on that one. But it's interesting because if you're working on an executive-level search, if it's a CFO, a CEO search, everybody you call wants to call you back. They want to hear about it. So your response rate is going to be great. It's more making sure you're contacting the right people and leveraging your time appropriately. So the numbers are going to be different than if you're looking for a senior accountant.
Yeah.
Well, your numbers are going to go way up on the outreach because there's going to be a lower response. And honestly, the younger generations, I don't think understand the value of having a relationship with a recruiter. If it were me, I even take time to, I invest time just getting to know candidates, even if I don't have an opportunity for them, because 2, 3, 4 years down the road, it might evolve into something. And I think a lot of these younger folks, they just dismiss them, whereas they should be talking with all of these recruiters and getting to know them. But I think it really depends on the level of the search. And when you come down to the more junior level, the numbers and the outreach just have to be greater because they're getting pummeled and spammed every day. And you just tend to be noise. And that's why phone calls, or better yet, networking into them through mutual connections, is one of our greatest advantages.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I completely agree when you said it's amazing how few people want to pick up the phone anymore. I don't know. I started in this business in 1997. Okay. I was 5 years old. No, I'm kidding. And I've never been scared of picking up the phone. And funnily enough, how I got into recruitment, I mean, I had a couple of other businesses before that, but when I was in high school, when I basically in the evenings, I just wanted a job. My parents didn't think, you know, me kind of, you know, washing cars at the weekend was something I would necessarily stick to. You know, I'm more of an indoors kind of guy. So, and I got a job at 16 years old selling kitchens over the phone. So my dad has to take me to some shady part of town after school, right? And then he'd go and about do whatever he did. Then he'd come back and pick me up at like 9 p.m., 10 p.m. and bring me home. And I was making a fortune. I was making far more than I ever did babysitting, right? And I never lost that taste for being on the phone and cold calling, even 30 something years later, you know, never left me. And it really surprises me. Mm-hmm. And we've had to, obviously internally, as we're hiring recruiters and researchers and, you know, people internally, it never ceases to amaze me how reluctant people are to get on the phone. I mean, I don't know whether it's social media has gotten people more used to texting or emailing, or they're just scared of rejection. I don't know what it is. I'm wondering whether you see the same thing from the people that you hire, the people you've hired in the past, whether there's, I don't know what the secret is, what I'm missing.
Well, I think everybody has their preference for the medium of communication. Some are more email, some are more phone. And it's nice to understand people's preference so that you can use that medium. But I often honestly find that people don't return voicemails, but they will return emails to schedule a time. So you've just got to look at what's working and try all options. I mean, sometimes we're triple tapping people. We'll call, we'll text, we'll email. And it's not to bother them. It's to make sure that they understand how awesome of an opportunity we're working on. And we're thinking of them for it. You know, it should be flattering. So I think people are just, they tend to be insecure and they don't like rejection. And I understand we're all human and nobody likes getting rejected, but I can count on one hand the number of bad conversations I've had from just cold calling someone. You know, they always go really well. So it is interesting how the generations are evolving, and you know, we evolve with it. So
yeah, I completely agree. So what are your top three tips for someone who wants to be successful, either as a recruiter, or the top three tips you would give to a client as they're working with you to have a successful recruitment process?
Yeah, I mean, I think just in terms of being successful as a recruiter, I would say being genuine, being transparent, being disciplined. You know, if you don't have anything to do, there's always another phone call you can make. There's always something you can be doing to hustle. So this is an industry where you have to hustle, but the rewards are great and the flexibility is phenomenal. I think in regards to advice for clients, don't be afraid to collaborate, be transparent, and you need to be responsive, because once you start engaging with candidates, especially in today's market, the clock is ticking and time kills deals. And so you need to be responsive. You need to be timely in giving feedback, good or bad. Providing feedback to candidates is closure. And even if they don't get the job, but you give them some meaningful feedback or advice, they're going to be a cheerleader for your business out in the market. If you don't get back to them and it's a bad interview experience, they're going to tell the market that too. So part of our job is being that public relations person on behalf of the HR, the hiring manager. So I think those would be some of my key tips for executive recruiters and clients.
Great stuff. And what's next for you and for Townsend Search?
That's a great question. You know, we've never been a firm to seek growth, but something's working because we're developing quite a big backlog of business right now. So for us, it's just understanding how to grow smart. We don't want to bring on anybody that we can't keep busy. So I think we're just continuing to try to please our clients and give them collaborative and customized solutions to take them through the journey of executive search and placement. So we're trying to just continue to professionalize our firm and do actually a better job of marketing and telling the market about what we do, because it's pretty awesome and we've got some really good clients and we create a lot of positive wins. So we just don't do a good job of telling everybody about it.
Great stuff. Well, I'm sure people will hear this and will want to reach out. So, and if so, how can they best do that?
Best way to reach me is either via my email address or LinkedIn profile tends to be the best. So pretty simple in that regards, and I'll certainly provide those links to you to share.
Fantastic. Yeah, we'll make sure they're in the show notes for everyone to access. Dan, this has been such a joy. I've really, really enjoyed digging into the rights and wrongs of recruitment, you know, the pitfalls and the possibilities. So it's been such a real joy getting to know you, hanging out with you and having this conversation today. So Dan Ellis, thank you so much for joining us here in the conference room.
Simon, thank you for having me. Looking forward to using this as a start to building our long-term relationship. So thank you very much.
Great stuff. Coming up next week on the conference room, I'll be talking to video marketing strategist India Brown.
But what I love about micro content is that people's attention spans are getting shorter and shorter. It's crazy. But I love it because you can get their attention really quick as long as you have a hook in the beginning. You don't have to introduce yourself. I know, like, back in the day, people used to make...
Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it. And make sure you visit our website, theconferenceroompodcast.com, to see all the other episodes and to get access to the show notes and resources mentioned in this episode. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your network, or better still, go on to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other podcast platform and leave us a 5-star review. It'll only take you a moment, but it'll mean the world to us. And please don't hesitate to tell us which topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes. To get in touch, drop us a line in the comment section or send us a message on social media. Just search for The Conference Room Podcast or me, Simon Lader, on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, or TikTok. I'm always open to a conversation. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you'll be alerted when a new episode goes live every week. Thanks so much for listening to The Conference Room, and until next time, keep talking.